Fala nesse roupa. Fala nesse roupa. Fala nesse roupa.
The first paradox we encounter in Planet Mission is a border conflict between the so-called locals and the art hipsters. Two gross generalizations, because stricto sensu, the locals aren't that local and the hipsters aren't that hip. The main complaint of the locals is that the hipsters don't really live in the mission, ontologically speaking. That they are here temporarily only to have a vicarious experience of bohemian otherness. They are perceived as obnoxious tourists crashing the hood, because it's closer than San Miguel Allende or Oaxaca, cheaper than Santa Fe or Venice Beach, and certainly less dangerous than Tijuana.
Good morning. You've tuned in to Listen Local, the bi-weekly webcast from your neighborhood news source, Mission Local, brought to you via BFF.fm. I'm sure the film buffs among you have no trouble imagining San Francisco as the set of a noir film mystery, but have you seen a noir film set in the Mission that takes more than a few jabs at gentrification and the way the neighborhood is changing in the 21st century? The Other Barrio is an artistic collaboration between a whole crew of venerated Mission artists, from poets to photographers, and it takes all of these kind of complicated themes and rolls them into a single film. It chronicles the tale of a dogged housing inspector who just has to find out more about a deadly fire in his neighborhood. Of course, that gets him into all sorts of trouble, including the fun kind with a twist on the classic femme fatale. And the film, based on a written work by Mission poet laureate Alejandro Murguia, debuted in February of this year and has made great strides since then. But without giving too much away, because the film will be screening tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday at the Brava Theater, let's talk about this a little. With me today are Lou DeMatteis and René Yáñez. Lou is a photographer and a visual artist who has worked in and documented the Mission District as well as other parts of the world for many years. He's the director of The Other Barrio. Lou, welcome.
Welcome, Laura. Glad to be here.
René is a well-known artist in the neighborhood, as well as the co-founder of the Galería de la Raza on 24th Street, and one of the primary driving forces bringing Mexico's Day of the Dead celebrations to life in the U.S. He's also the production designer of the film. René, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having us.
So let's get into some of the details here about why this film has so much meaning in the current climate of change in this neighborhood. But first, let's give listeners who have not seen the film a better idea of what's going on. What is the barrio, and what is the other barrio? René, maybe you can explain that.
Well, the other barrio is the Mission, where Latinos, Chicanos live, and they confront certain things, like fires in the Mission. And I'm sure Mission Local is familiar with that.
Extensively, unfortunately.
And it's a reality that we have faced for many years. And this is based from the Garland Hotel on 16th and Valencia.
And what kind of hotel is the Garland Hotel?
Well, that was in the 70s, you know, when redevelopment, the bar was opening, everything was hot in, real estate. And that hotel burnt, and people knew it was, irregular fire, and people died, 7 people died and all that. And so...
Well, in fact, it was ruled arson by the San Francisco Fire Department.
Mm-hmm. Something that we're not seeing so much right now, even though yes. We have an enormous amount of fires.
Yeah, and this fire is, you know, arson happens, but nobody ever gets prosecuted. People die, and it's nebulous. And this, it has a history. Victor Miller from the North Mission News used to cover it, and he has his archives at El Tecolote. Mm-hmm. And you know, Lou and I did research, and I used to know Victor, and it was a topic of conversation because, boom, a fire happened, and then next thing you know, it's a condo. So. We have those sort of theories about this, and the film brings it up, and also brings up gentrification, something where we're facing. Something as topic of the day, Prop I, and some of the other propositions. You know, our people are confronting what's happening to us as a city, as a neighborhood, and how do we, you know, confront this situation?
Yeah, so the protagonist of the film chooses to confront the situation essentially through the city's, you know, outside of the city system. So he's a housing inspector, right? Mm,
that's correct.
But he's going above and beyond what his job requires of him. So what happens to him as a result of that? And what do you think drives him to do that?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say I am actually the co-producer of the film.
I apologize.
That's all right.
Lou is the co-producer.
And
of the
my film partner is the co-producer and director is Dante Bateo.
Dante.
Yeah.
My apologies.
That's okay. It's okay.
Correction.
What happens to our investigator in the film? Well, that's kind of the real backbone of the story in a way. His boss wants him to rule the fire as an accident because of code violations. But he goes to the hotel and he finds that, in his opinion, it's arson. So he wants to find out who was behind the arson. So that sets him off on a journey. And it sets a lot of opposition in front of him because the powers that be want this particular fire swept under the rug and ruled as a result of fire hazards.
And what do you think drives him to dig deeper into this?
Well, I think I think he's trying to find the truth. For in our film, seven people die, and so I think those deaths are what really drives him. He feels that he needs to find out what happened so that there'll be some sort of justice for the people that passed away, that died in the fire. And so, yes, as Renee said, the other barrio is the mission, but the other barrio is also where we go. It's the big other barrio where we go after we die. So that's, you know, so as he's in the other barrio and he's trying to find some peace and justice for the people that have been killed in the fire.
Mm-hmm. And this particular inspector also has, I would say, a deeper connection to the mission, right?
Well, one thing, you know, that it takes place in the mission, you see Esta Noche Club, which is no longer there, but it's a beautiful scene that takes place because when I look at the movie, I reminisce of the old Esta Noche. It takes place in the Mexican bus. You know, they're driving around. Takes place in Mary's Pub. Certain landmarks in San Francisco, in the mission. And so people get the idea that it is about the mission and the inspector, you know, Radio Havana Club. So if you are a local and see this film, you're going to recognize certain parts of it. And the housing inspector goes underground, actually, and because he can't deal with a bureaucracy in City Hall, can't deal with the pirates and be. You know, it sounds familiar. It does become interesting because Richard Montoya is one of the actors. He's from the Bay Area, in Culture Clash, he's acted in several plays, and so he's good at sending the message about what it is to be frustrated with City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a lot of different points, but people are going to recognize some of the landmarks that were here and still here.
And some that aren't, right?
Yes, some that aren't.
And in his character's particular case, he grew up in the mission. So we find that out. We find out he grew up in the mission. He ran the mission, you know, as kids. They ran around on bikes and they knew all the alleyways and the corners and everything. So he's upset because he sees this neighborhood changing. and changing rapidly. And he sees the evictions and old friends and families that he knows, he has known growing up. He sees them being forced out, and he sees new condos being replacing some of these venues, locations that Renee mentioned. Mm-hmm. And so he doesn't like it. He's upset about that.
So channeling, I imagine, the frustrations of many local residents that you have all, you've observed and I think felt too, right? Well,
that's correct.
Yeah, no, I personally, I know artists that lived here that having to go to Oakland, to Concord, to Pittsburgh, it's a different thing. And I was fortunate enough with the Mission Economic Development helped me out, City Land Trust, to stay in San Francisco. And I'm grateful to the Mission community, our commission, a lot of people that spoke out about this, because, you know, there's artists that work here. They teach. Some people teach kids in the Mission for free. They're not getting any money, but getting satisfaction. And, you know, that developer's mentality don't understand that. They just understand money. They don't understand feelings or what people contribute to the community. So I'm very proud to be part of this film because it sends a message. I want people to see this movie and think about what is happening to the Mission, what is happening to San Francisco, what is happening in the Bayview, and that is affecting all of us, you know. And we want to send out this message. Prop I is going to have a table there, and we're trying to also work with the local issues, because it's important. And they came to us and we say, yes, it is an important issue, and we're going to pass out the word. And so, you know, I'm very proud to work with Dante and Lou, because it's you know, film business, raising the money. And I mean, we didn't have a large budget, but we really struggled. We had a red camera that was good. We had a good crew, and we worked really hard to bring this film to life. And, you know,
yeah. Well, so these are really local issues, and I think people who live here and have lived here a long time mm-hmm. feel very connected to the issues and to the images in the film and the things that are happening. But you've now shown this, you know, around the country, right?
Yeah,
you've
screened Luke it in took it to places. New York. What was that?
Yeah, well, actually, yeah, we have shown at different film festivals. Mm-hmm. And what we found, well, we sort of knew this already doing the research for the film, and we even make mention of it. But gentrification is not only happening in San Francisco.
Of course, yeah.
And certain cities are facing it really heavily. Mm-hmm. And one of the film festivals we were invited to and that we screened at was the Washington, D.C. Independent Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the reasons we were chosen is because we were dealing with the issue of gentrification.
Wow.
And they're facing it big time in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in fact, it was real interesting. They placed us, we had two screenings. So the first screening was at George Washington University, beautiful, fantastic facility, nice screening that was kind of like that was the opening screening for us. But then they placed us in Columbia Heights, which is a Latino African American neighborhood that is facing gentrification in much the same way that the Mission is.
Do they see a lot of fires there too?
There's no fires. Alejandro made the trip, mm-hmm. and he mentioned when he addressed the crowd that it was a good thing that their buildings were built out of stone because least they didn't have to face the fires that we face in the Mission. But other than that, it was really the same. And it was the film was shown in like a cultural center, a private cultural center, yeah. And it was packed. You know, it's packed, standing room only, mm-hmm. and it was the same issues that, you know, people are facing in San Francisco. And we also showed at a film festival in Middlebury, Vermont, and it was the same thing. We were really chosen because of the gentrification issue.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I think you and I talked a little bit about this on, exchanging emails. Mm-hmm. That actually, when we finished the film, we were really promoting it as a noir film. Yeah. We weren't getting so much into the gentrification in terms of the promotion of the film. And we weren't getting picked for the film festivals.
Oh, interesting.
And so I decided that we change the way that we present the film. And we, you know, it's still a noir film. It's got all those elements. But we really pumped up the fact that it's about gentrification. And that really opened doors for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a very interesting learning experience for me. And also, you know, this idea that gentrification, or this reality that gentrification, is not just in San Francisco.
Yeah, and then it really elicits a response from people, right?
Yeah.
What kind of responses did you get? I mean, with all this very hyper-local sort of imagery and thematic work, do people relate to it beyond the theme of gentrification? What did they tell you about it, or what did they tell Alejandro?
Well, in terms of when we show it here or when we show it...
When you show it elsewhere.
Show it elsewhere.
Yeah.
They relate to it in several ways. They relate to it as a noir thriller.
Uh-huh.
And they relate to it, for example, in Vermont, we showed it in a place where it was primarily a Anglo audience. And there was no gentrification really taking place. So in that case, they really related to it as a political noir thriller,
mm-hmm.
with the background, because the backdrop politically is there's a lot of corruption going on. And
yeah.
That's why they want our protagonist to, you know, to rule the fire was a, you know, an accident. So they really related to the film as a political thriller with the political corruption and then the gentrification. It was interesting though in there because my daughter went with me to that festival and she brought up the issue. We did a Q&A afterwards and she was part of it. And then she brought up the issue of gentrification. So then we began to have a discussion and we found out that actually in certain parts of Vermont, like in Burlington, there's some gentrification, and a number of people were there that had spent time in Boston, and Boston has really been hit by gentrification, and the same way it is here, and with a lot of the Latino community, the same way as in Washington D.C. we found out is that when people lose their homes, they can't find them in the city.
Right.
So in Washington, they've been moving to Virginia. So a lot of people moved out of the neighborhoods and moved into Virginia, and in same with Boston, a lot have moved to Somerset, which I haven't been there myself, but it's near Boston, but it's not in the city itself.
Mm-hmm.
So
you sort of see the same pattern of gentrification sort of rippling outward from the point where it originates and then affecting communities around it.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing that both in Washington D.C. and in Boston. When people lose their homes or their apartments or whatever, they because of the prices, they can't find something in the city,
right.
And they have to migrate out. Right. Urban dislocation, mm-hmm. I think we called it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the local element of this, and I want to talk about the characters here because there's some, you know, there's I think a sense of criticism in the film for kind of clueless, unengaged newcomers, but you also have made a point essentially of creating a few young tech savvy heroes. What lessons are we supposed to draw from this cast of characters, or what message can we glean?
Well, that you know, there's people from Silicon Valley that empathize with some of the locals. And then the movie tried to help, and they're not quite the villains. So it's interesting because there are people as such. And, you know, it's not portraying a lot of the newcomers as villains, but it's people moving in certain realities. I know a company in Arkansas got flipped. 500 people moved here all at once to the Bay Area. Things like that are happening, and it's part, the second part, the first part was Alejandro Murguia. The second part was Richard Montoya. Mm-hmm. And Alejandro had written it way back a few years. And Richard brought it up to date. Mm-hmm. And his analysis of part of sympathetic hackers. More people, the techies outside of the law, they're more hackers and more a certain consciousness, more underground. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's to come in and check out the movie, and people take different things from it. It's not all spelled out, but it's an important message that could be analyzed in different ways. But
so it's a message that you can interpret in different ways.
Well, I think we show that it's a little more complicated than it might seem on the face of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, we all use technology. We're using technology right here now.
Computer.
And, you know, not all technology is bad. I think we make the point that when people come in and they're totally clueless to the neighborhoods that they're moving into and the effects that they're having, that's something that we're all really pushing back against, because that's part of what's happening. But there are, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, there's so much in terms of, you know, all like WikiLeaks and like Snowden. I mean, that's all technology. That's all people that are using technology, but they're using it in such a way that it helps the society around us. And technology can be used in that way, but the important thing is that it is used in that way, and that it's not just used, you know, to make money and to push people out of, you know, out of the neighborhoods where they're living.
Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, too, we have Guillermo Gomez Peña with Hipterismo that you started, and he also has a spoken word rap message to make people think.
Which you may have heard at the beginning of the show.
And
actually, which we did.
And actually, the soundtrack is very good. I mean, Greg Landau, to me, hit it out of the ballpark. The jazz sections of it are very smooth and soulful. Hipterismo, I think it's really hits the mark. And so this is something, you know, that came after the movie. I was very surprised how much I liked it, how good it is, you know. So so there's different elements of the movie. But again, you know, it's Greg Landau, a musician, engineer, and he uses technology. You know, we're not anti-technology, but, you know, I'm trying to put the message that people, they come out of town and they're not knowing what's happening to our neighborhood, not knowing about the fires, not knowing about people that displace the teachers, the nurses, the artist. You know, this all could be solved, you know, if Mark Zuckerberg with all his billions could say, okay, we're going to build low-cost housing for people. I mean, it could be solved.
So it's the difference between newcomers who come and sort of settle down without looking around and newcomers who come here and engage.
Well, that's part of it, but there's a demographic problem, which is what Renee alluded to, is it's housing.
Right.
So I just want to give an example because, okay, my history and career is as an international photojournalist, and mm-hmm. I've worked a lot in Asia. You know, I worked in China. Actually, I had a book published in China, and where we printed the book, well, was published in the U.S., but printed in China. But where we printed, they had all the printing presses there, but they also they also provided housing for the workers that worked in the printing presses, mm-hmm. and, you know, and other parts of that of the business. So I mean, why don't these tech companies that have so much money? They're sitting on billions of dollars. I think Apple's sitting on $62 billion and Google is sitting on $100 billion. Why aren't these companies building housing for their for their workers. Because what instead of building housing, and they have the money to do it, they bus them up to the city and they take housing from people that already are living in these apartments and these flats.
So it goes beyond the engagement of the individual to the lack of engagement of the company.
I think so, because we can't blame everything on. What are people going to do? They go to school, they get an education, they want to get a job. I mean, that's natural. But to be put in a situation where they're taking housing away from other people, that's not natural. But something needs to be done, and that's just one thing. I think, you know, I'm really surprised it's not part of the big discussion that these big, huge companies with all their money are not building houses. They build everything else for their, you know, they build campuses, but no, Lou, no housing.
Some of these companies are very Trumpy.
That's an adjective now. You've just coined it.
If they had consciousness, they would build housing, they would build schools, they would build, you know, instead you have Trump yelling at Bernie Sanders, oh, communist and all that, because Bernie has a certain compassion for people and points out this. So, you know, I met some of these Silicon Valley people, and they're kind of Trumpy. I wish I had a heart and compassion and see what's happening. And not only for neighborhoods like the Mission, but their own workers, you know, building them housing where they won't have to commute and things of the sort. So, this is a personal view, of course. I just look at, you know, it used to be something to be a billionaire, but now there's so many billionaires in San Francisco that, and they're young, and they should have a certain amount of consciousness.
But still so many people who are not wealthy at all.
Well, yeah, no, you know, that's struggling, but there's, you know, this, and this is why also people are coming to the Bay Area, because you can become a billionaire. Mm-hmm. So... It just, it's a matter of consciousness, and it's a matter of, sort of raise some of these points in the movie.
Speaking of the movie.
some closing thoughts, okay.
Before we run out of time, we want people to come and see this movie.
What's the date?
Tell us where and when to go. Yeah.
Okay.
And how much it costs and how great it is.
It opens tomorrow night on October 16th at the Brava Theater, which is located at 24th and York Streets, and you can get tickets online at brava.org, or you could get, there'll be plenty of tickets at the door, and we are also showing on Saturday the 17th, Sunday the 18th, and Thursday the 22nd, and tickets are $12. And like I said, they're available either online through the Brava, www.brava.org, or we have plenty for walk-ups. And
fantastic.
You can just get tickets at the door.
So, Lou, when is Richard Montoya?
Yeah, Richard Montoya.
When is he going to be there?
Richard Montoya, the lead actor, is going to be at both the Friday and Saturday night screenings. And there'll be a Q&A after both those screenings. And Richard's coming up from Los Angeles. It'll actually be the first time he'll be with us when we screen the film.
Fantastic. So, everybody, don't miss that. But we're out of time, and that's our show. You've been tuned in to Listen Local, brought to you by the staff of Mission Local. If you know something that we don't that you think we should, shoot us an email at info@missionlocal.com. I want to thank our guests today for coming in.
Oh, thank you, Laura. We're happy to be here.
It was a pleasure to have you. So when we're done, you should check out some electronic tunes and more from across the pond, brought to you by John Digital. Thanks for listening.